Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly cultural magazine about things, all things considered in a cultural sense. Book of Mormon actor A.J. Holmes, who is better known to the world as Elder Cunningham, is going to be here and tell us more about the Book of Mormon. California Symphony Music Director Donato Cabrera is going to talk about his work with California Symphony, as well as the San Francisco Youth Symphony as well. And we have also the composer of a world premiere that will happen this weekend. We'll hear more about that. And imagine Joseph Conrad's story, Heart of Darkness, as an opera. The composer of that piece, Tarek O'Regan, is here in the KLW studio. Performance this weekend at Z-Space. Coming up here on Open Air. a piece in the style of Tarek O'Regan, who is our guest in this segment of Open Air. He is the composer of an opera that will be produced this weekend in San Francisco at Z-Space, based on the story of Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. Tarek O'Regan, welcome to KLW.
Thank you. It's very good to be here.
So how did you choose Heart of Darkness as a subject for an opera?
Composers are always looking around for subjects to adapt, and it came about largely because I was looking for a chamber opera, and I couldn't really think of an idea. And I'd always thought Heart of Darkness would make a good opera, having grown to love the adaptation that probably everyone knows the best, which is Apocalypse Now, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only when there was that sort of director's version, the Redux version, where it made note of a radio play by Orson Welles of Heart of Darkness. And it turned out that Heart of Darkness was the first film that Welles wanted to make. It wasn't going to be Citizen Kane. And he went fairly far commissioning various scripts and things, but it didn't transpire. But what ended up was a radio play, and I heard it, and it's a brutally stripped-down version of the story, 20 minutes radio play. And, you know, the problem with a lot of operas is the librettos are too wordy, and there's not enough room for the music to do its job. So when I heard that version that was so stripped down but kept the sort of nuances of the narrative, I thought, you know, this could really work. And then I spoke with my librettist, Tom Phillips, about turning it into an opera, and he really did an amazing job and restricted himself only to words by Conrad. So the libretto is actually made really by cutting up the novel, and there's probably 99.9% of the words are removed from the novel, but enough is there to thread a narrative. So the only words that you hear are by Conrad, either from the novel Heart of Darkness or, in fact, from his own navigational diary. And, yeah, it premiered in the UK at the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden a few years ago, and so this is its US premiere in a dramatically and excitingly reworked version by Opera Parallel.
Ooh, I understand that the stagecraft for this is going to be quite awesome. What will people see when they walk into it?
Well, you know, what they'll see is cutting-edge technology, and it was really interesting because technology played a role in the British production, and it was to do with old-fashioned technology, which is water. Lighting designers love water because the effect of light in a stage on water is totally unrecreatable using digital technology. And so the British production, the stage flooded with water. This is a different kind of technology. It uses digital projection mapping, a series of projectors, which are able to project live manipulated imagery across moving objects and various parts of the stage. So you're in a totally abstracted space, which is based on the graphic design of a designer called Matt Kish. And the team behind Opera Parallel has used that to put you in, I suppose, the mental space of the protagonist, who is Marlowe, looking back on this mysterious journey he took as a child. And we're very much in an abstracted space in his head. And I would say it really plays with the idea of psychodrama. And it's extremely, I mean, I've never seen anything like it in terms of the way in which the space is used entirely, from the stage to the audience to the orchestra. There, you're in a single space, and you very much feel that you're inside someone's thoughts.
And in 25 words or less, for those who have never read the book Heart of Darkness, what goes on in this story?
The basic story of Heart of Darkness is an old man on the Thames remembering a time when he was younger, and he went, we never know where it is, but he went into an equatorial forest to find what he calls a legendary trader of ivory. And upon finding this legendary trader, someone that we discover is called Kurtz, he discovers that the reason why he collects so much ivory is that he's a tyrannical, evil, slave-driving person. Kurtz dies uttering the famous lines, "The horror, the horror," at which point Marlowe comes back to Europe. And many people think that's the interesting part of the story. But for me, in the opera, and what we really chose to adapt, is the fact that Marlowe, as an older man, is remembering this story, and he remembers that when he came back, he meets Kurtz's fiancée, this terrible man, everything that he's seen, all the worst aspects of the British, of the European colonial endeavour in what was Equatorial Africa. He comes back and he meets Kurtz's fiancée, and Kurtz's fiancée says, what were his last words? Leave me at least that. And we, of course, know that his last words are the horror, the horror. And Marlowe lies. Marlowe says, well, his last words were your name. And for some reason, the older Marlowe wants us to know that he came back and he lied, despite all that he saw, despite every aspect of the worst elements of European colonialism, he plays a part in it. And that is very important. That's what we draw out in the opera, is this sense of complicitness. And I suppose that's why it becomes a psychodrama. It's very much an exorcism of a kind and also a confession. And what makes it really interesting is that it's not a work of fiction. This is the story that Joseph Conrad himself took and the journey that he himself took at the end of the 19th century. So one could, in fact, view the novel as his own confession, and that's where we take it with the opera.
Tarik O'Regan is our guest here on the segment of Open Air. He has composed an opera based on the story of Heart of Darkness of Joseph Conrad. This production is happening this weekend at Z Space here in San Francisco, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that. Is this your first opera?
Yeah, it is my first opera. And, you know, I was very lucky in that it was developed by two companies, one in America called American Opera Projects and one in the UK called Opera East, part of something called the Genesis Foundation. But what was really nice about it is they treated it much more like musical theatre, which is it was allowed to be developed properly. One of the big problems with opera is you commission a composer to write an opera and they turn up with a score, you know, like 3 years down the line. They turn up with a score and that's it. And then, you know, often it's not very good, but that's because they didn't get to try it out. You know, you look at the history of opera, and composers had a lot of time to work with audiences. What would today be called out of town tryouts? And we were lucky to be able to develop the opera in workshops and other forms. So it was quite interesting coming here and seeing a radically different interpretation. And it's short, you know. It's not an epic opera. It's a chamber opera. It's about 16 instruments, 8 singers. It lasts an hour and 20 minutes. It's very much an immersive experience. It's about as long as my attention span lasts.
So just one act then.
Yeah, that's it.
My goodness.
Yeah, it's like the novella. If you go look at the novella, it's very small, about 100 pages. I was very much, you know, Raymond Carver, the short story writer. There's something about, he liked the fact that it took one sitting to write a short story, and it takes one sitting to read a short story, and the physicality of a similar immersive space really appealed to him. And I think that's the same with me, that you go in and out of this thing, and you wonder whether it all really happened or whether it was in the protagonist's mind. But the team at Opera Parallel are absolutely phenomenal, and I come, you know, from the UK, where we have a lot of big opera companies, a lot of small opera companies. But I have to say, what I've seen them do with the merging of technology and what is effectively an extremely old art form, opera, an extremely bizarre art form as well, people singing for the whole time, you know, to make it feel absolutely relevant and exciting and bang up to date is all down to that team.
Did Opera Parallel commission you to do this piece? How did you guys connect? How did the composer and Opera Parallel?
The opera was commissioned by the Royal Opera House in London and by the company, in a co-production with a company called Opera East that put it on. And what happened is there's a great organization in America called Opera America. And Opera America is the service organization for opera across the United States. They bring people together to talk about opera, which needs to be done, frankly, because, as I said, it's a bizarre art form and people don't understand it. And it's really good that we have people talking about it and reminding people how good it is. And one of the things they do is they showcase operas from around the world that may not have been exposed to a U.S. audience. And one of the pieces they chose was Heart of Darkness. So back a couple of years ago, we presented a couple of excerpts from the opera in New York. Opera America is based in New York. And the company that really ran with it with the most interesting idea and that didn't simply want to transfer the U.K. production to the U.S. was Opera Parallel. They wanted to reinvent it. And, you know, as a composer, it's not hard getting a premiere. It's really not hard getting a first performance. What's hard is getting a second performance and a third performance. And that is one of the real problems that we face in the contemporary music world. We all love a premiere because you can get behind it. But for this to happen out here, a second performance, a second run of the opera, and a U.S. premiere is really exciting. And that's thanks down to the vision of Opera Parallel and also the help of places like Opera America. So I'm honored and excited. And it's delightful to be here in the sun. I came from England. I'm jet-lagged and smiling. That's how happy I am. even though it's the Heart of Darkness.
Tarika Regan, his composition, The Heart of Darkness, will be produced this weekend. Only four performances, Friday the 1st at 8 p.m., Saturday, May 2nd at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., and then Sunday, May 3rd at 2 p.m. at Z-Space Gallery.
And can I interject to say, Friday is already sold out, and
really?
The tickets are going very, very quickly. And
well, then.
The one that has most availability is Saturday matinee, and in fact there is a discount of 25%.
Well then,
which you can get online with the code 25matinee. So the number's 25 and then MITINEE. But yeah, Friday night sold out, and I think the rest are going to go very quickly.
How very exciting!
It's exciting for me. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. I wanted to ask you. You usually compose choral pieces, or what's your orchestra of choice, your gathering of voices of choice?
You know, that tends to very much be who's writing the check, and that
I understand.
There's a distinct, I would say, 100% correlation between the.
I understand completely.
But no, I began writing for voices because I studied in the UK, studied at Oxford, that had a lot of choirs. You know, when you begin writing music, that's when you're not very good, and that's actually the irony is when you need the really good performances of your work. And the weird world that we live in is the better you get as a composer, the more of a reputation you get as a composer. That's when you're rewarded with the great performances. But actually, you need them right at the beginning, because then when it sounds terrible, you know that it's your fault. It's not the performer's fault. And I remember being at university and having, some friends play a sort of string trio, and it sounded terrible. And I had no idea whether it was because they were terrible instrumentalists or whether it was because I was a bad composer. But Oxford has many world-class choirs. So when I took my work to them and it was done, they sang it amazingly well. And you knew if you were unhappy with any aspect of it as a composer, you know, it was your fault. So I grew very much as a composer with choral music, and then began to sort of expand and go into other things. And recently I've been doing a lot of work with electronics. I've just finished work with Sydney Dance Company for that. I'm working with right now on a big ballet for the Dutch National Ballet. And a lot of symphonic music. Do a lot of work in the UK with the British orchestras, with the BBC Symphony Orchestra and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra and things like that. So coming back to this and opera, with sort of merging of voices and instruments, is very nice. But there's a very soft spot in my heart for the voice, partly because that's where I began writing.
I noticed that right away when I saw a YouTube video of a performance of Triptych.
Oh, yeah.
And it was performed by a choir of voices that usually specializes in the music of Bach.
Yeah.
And they were gorgeous.
Wonderful.
So, people, you should find this.
I will. Then find out.
Tarika Regan is our guest here on Open Air. He is the composer of Heart of Darkness, an opera adaptation of the great Joseph Conrad novella, performed this weekend by members of Opera Parallel at Z-Space here in San Francisco, 450 Florida Street in San Francisco. The telephone number at Z-Space is 415-626-0453. The website for Z-Space is zspace.org. Friday night's performance is sold out, but Saturday's matinee, and I assume Sunday matinees is still available?
Saturday matinee, Saturday evening, Sunday matinee is still available, and there's a particular discount on for Saturday matinee if you use the code 25matinee.
25matinee.
Yeah.
Make sure you spell matinee correctly.
And the number's 25, MITINEE. That sounds like a radio call sign.
Honestly.
KALW, that's what I should say.
Close enough. Tarika, an honor to meet you.
And you.
And I'm looking forward to this production here. Tell me about, we're going to listen to a piece of yours from Scattered Rhymes. What's going on in this piece here?
Okay, so yeah, I was just talking about working with Sydney Dance Company, and this is a piece that was turned into a dance piece. So you're about to hear the Orlando Consort, which is an early music consort, and the Estonian Philharmonic Chamber Choir, conducted by Paul Hillier, from an album called Scattered Rhymes on Harmonia Mundi. And really what it is a concerto for four solo voices.
Mm.
And it builds in from this sort of repeated motive, and you hear four voices at first, and then you feel the whole choir come in. And it's really about unrequited love and its settings of Petrarch.
Derek O'Regan, thank you so much.
Thank you. Se lamentava che io vedi fronde muove suavemente alla restiva ora come ora di lucido e sopra tu una fiori tale fresca viva la mia seggia dal morbenzose scrivane che c'è nel vostro terra nascondere gioie parole ti intendo del cor viva ti si lontano a sospirmi e rispondete perché innanzi tempo ti consumeri dice con pietà te a te sì, degli occhi tristi, un doloroso fiume di me, non piangevo che mi difessi, morendo e temi, e nei non come quando mostra di chiudersi.
selection from a piece composed in 2006 of Tarek O'Regan performing a performance of a piece from Scattered Rhymes, Tarek O'Regan's piece of Heart of Darkness, this weekend at Z Space. It's Open Air, normally hosted by David LaTulipe. Good afternoon, I'm Kevin Vance. I'm honored to bring to the KALW microphones now Donato Donato Cabrera, who wears many hats, as well as composer Dan Visconti. And we're going to talk about a number of events coming up, such as this weekend involving the premiere of Dan Visconti's piece. Donato, welcome back to KALW.
Great to be back, Kevin.
Yes. So in all the many hats that you wear, we're going to talk about this weekend's show in Walnut Creek. This is the California Symphony. It's performing, the performance is Sunday afternoon?
That's right, Sunday afternoon at 4 at the Lesher Center for the Performing Arts.
And that's downtown Walnut Creek.
That's right. Parking is readily available, which one can't always claim for San Francisco venues.
What's going on the Sunday performance?
We have, he's sitting right next to me.
Dan.
We're very, very lucky to have our premiere of our latest young American composer in residence, and Dan Visconti is, it's such an honor to have him as our newest member to an august group of composers. And the piece that will be premiered this weekend, in fact, our first rehearsal is this evening in about 5.5 hours, is a piece that he just finished called Breakdown. And Dan, if you would be so kind to talk a little bit about this fantastic piece.
Of course. I'm really quite happy to be here, too, and be one of the composers in the line of this really fantastic residency program. It's the only program in the country I'm aware of that allows composers a chance to work with an orchestra, not just in creating the premiere, but before that moment and really workshopping a piece and trying different ideas and seeing what works, what sticks. So it's been a lot of fun. The resulting piece, Breakdown, is about 10 minutes long, and it's a piece that's really, it started with certain ideas about rock music jamming that I often play with. And a lot of my sound is often based on the sound of rock and jazz. It ended up growing into something that doesn't so much have those sonic characteristics as much as the sense of deep depth and kind of a slow progression of things getting pushed to a point where they fall apart, which was kind of a more metaphorical inspiration. So it's a piece that has a lot of strings and some really soaring melodies and some great performances from members of the orchestra, so I'm really looking forward to getting to work with them tonight.
Can I ask you about being a composer, one who, you're born in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
How does a late 20th century, early 21st century composer work with what has been popular culture for the last few years? I'm thinking of the Walkman generation, people who grew up watching MTV. How did you go from being of a time in history when people don't usually think of classical music to becoming a classical composer?
Well, it's a great question, and I think it's funny you mentioned the Walkman generation, because one of the things that's really funny about that generation is that we had all this new stuff, and it very quickly became obsolete and replaced by other even newer stuff. So, you know, there's a sense where it was the perfect moment to both know a thing or two about technology, but also to be given a really swift kick in the pants about how obsolescence happens very quickly. And I think those two lessons were things that informed me a lot, because I heard a lot of great music around me. I always listened to pop and rock and jazz, other stuff that was going on. And the obvious thing to have done would have been to incorporate aspects of electronics and stuff more. I have some pieces that have done that, but I found that what I've really been interested in is taking some of those techniques and sounds and translating them to more acoustic venues. I have an orchestra piece and a string quartet that both end up sounding amplified, even though they're entirely acoustic, just because of certain special playing techniques. So I think that a lot of my inspiration had to do with sound and timbre, and about how classical music could almost be reinvigorated with that special sound of freedom and wildness when you go and you see a great jazz combo perform. So trying to bring those elements to classical music and almost invade the classical concert world from secret, from this kind of infiltration, I guess, kind of infiltrating that world and bringing it some things that are often missing. And those are often the qualities that I feel attract listeners that aren't so into classical music, or especially modern classical music, to other kinds of music. They want excitement. They want something that's a visceral experience and something that has a lot of richness and rawness to the palate, too. And I think that's what I hear in a lot of kinds of great folk music from all ages, but I think especially with the kinds of popular music that I most like now, it tends to be the stuff that has some production and variety to it, and also that same sense of rawness, not such a slick kind of production. So that really inspired me to go and try to find a way to connect with audiences, but not so much trying to become a kind of pop musician, but taking those lessons I learned and applying them to the role of a classical composer, updating that for the 21st century.
You prefer composing for acoustic instruments rather than electronic, then?
Yeah, I would say. I've definitely done some of them, and I like blending them. But I think the reason for that is that I grew up playing violin, and I played in youth orchestras and things like that, too. And it really occurs to me that you can do all this great stuff as a composer. You can release direct to disc, and you can set it all in stone. But there's still people that will always learn violin or flute. And if all they have to play is Mozart and Beethoven, I mean, that's not so terrible in a sense, this wonderful music, but it'll make that music more and more like a museum piece. And I've always been really excited about programs like the Sundays, where I'm, you know, not just on a new music only concert, but with some traditional repertoire that people might already know, because I think it not only is a great way to get, you know, present the new work in the context of tradition, but I think it also ends up keeping some of those more traditional war horses relevant. So I feel there's a particular mission that I have in terms of updating music like that. And I've tried to redefine what that role of the composer is, not just in those kind of stylistic things, but being someone who's in general more engaged with the community and trying to create a lot of social practice projects as well that address concerns of different communities instead of just writing some music that sounds pretty.
One of our two guests here on this segment of Open Air, Dan Visconti, a composer. The world premiere of his piece Breakdown will be performed this Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. in Walnut Creek at the Hoffman Theater, the Lesher Center for the Arts. The address is 1601 Civic Drive, Walnut Creek. You can go to lesherartscenter.org for more information. I want to play for people a piece of yours that maybe gives people an example of your sound. What we are about to hear a piece called Drift of Rainbows. What's going on in this piece?
Well, this is a piece that came to me after a long drive where I went past the Painted Desert right as the sun was setting, and it was just really lovely and beautiful, and I wanted to create music that captured that sense of slowly shifting colors. It's almost minimalism in a sense. It's just a single sign gesture that repeats and becomes more elaborate. But I think it's a piece very much about that sense of things changing and being caught in states between full light and full darkness.
Let's listen to a little bit of it. the lovely music of Dan Visconti. We're listening to a piece of his called Drift of Rainbows. Dan Visconti's piece called Breakdown will premiere this Sunday at 4 p.m., a performance at the Hoffman Theater Leisure for the Arts, performance by the California Symphony. Donato Cabrera is also here in the KLW studio to talk about this event coming up this coming Sunday at 4 p.m. You may go to the Leisure Center ticket office, telephone number 925-943-7469 for more information. And I understand there will be a pre-concert lecture at 3 p.m.
That's right. You get to hear Dan and I talk in depth about the pieces and be, you know, a little act on stage.
This is a gorgeous piece, Dan. I feel privileged to hear this. I always want to ask a composer, who is your number one inspiration? Who did you listen to that made you go, I want to be a composer just like this guy?
Gosh, you know, it was so many things, but I have to say it was really hearing the music of the Beatles, and I'll tell you why. Is that for many reasons, when I heard their music, I heard music that was unabashedly melodic and accessible, but also incredibly dynamic and experimental. And I think those are two threads in contemporary classical music that are often not brought together.
Mm. Dan, we're looking forward to this. The premiere of his piece called Breakdown, being performed by the California Symphony under the direction of Donato Cabrera, Hoffman Theater, Leisure Center for the Arts, 1601 Civic Drive in Walnut Creek. The program will also consist of music of Grieg and Tchaikovsky as well.
Just little pieces like Tchaikovsky Symphony No. 4.
Just and, a little piece.
Yeah.
Nothing get in the way there.
A little throwaway.
Just a little something, yeah, just to fill up the time. LeisureArtsCenter.org is the website. CaliforniaSymphony.org is another website to go to. And Donato, you'll be leading the California Symphony. Now, you run the California Symphony, and you run the San Francisco Youth Orchestra?
San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra.
Symphony Youth Orchestra.
Yes.
And Las Vegas?
Las Vegas Philharmonic. And I have a music festival in the summer in New Hampshire. I keep busy.
How do you do it? Do you sleep?
Ask me that question every day and I'll give you a different answer.
Depending
on how much coffee I've had. But,
I'm
you know.
I'm tired of that question.
No. It's always a question I ask myself. How do I do this? No, and you bring up the San Francisco Symphony. I'm still so honored and in many ways I feel lucky to have the position of resident conductor of the San Francisco Symphony, through which most people in the Bay Area know me as someone who conducts a lot of the majority of education concerts and some of the family concerts, and of course being the music director of the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra now for 6 years. It's an incredible honor, and this is, as many people say, it's one of the jewels in the crown of the San Francisco Symphony, and we have a fantastic concert coming up in May.
May.
And that's also on a Sunday afternoon, which will consist of John Adams' Short Ride in a Fast Machine, as well as Mahler's fantastic Symphony No. 5, which we will be taking on tour.
Mm.
To Europe. We take the youth orchestra on tour every 3 years or thereabouts, and we will be taking not only the Mahler's Fifth Symphony, but Berlioz's Symphony Fantastique, a new piece by Mason Bates called Garages of the Valley, of course, a John Adams Short Ride in a Fast Machine, and Bruch's Violin Concerto. Mm-hmm. And we'll be performing with Sergei Khachaturian and Reno Capuçon, are the two violin soloists that we will be performing throughout Europe. And it's such a wonderful opportunity for these fantastic talents to experience the cities in which most of these composers walked down the very same cobblestones, and to have that cultural immersion. Usually for the first time, most of these kids have never gone to Europe before, and so we are providing that fantastic exposure to them in the world's greatest halls, the Philharmonia, the Berlin Philharmonic, the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam, the Smetana Hall in Prague. These are just some of the many illustrious venues that the Youth Orchestra will perform in this summer. So very much looking forward to that, and of course the concert coming up in May.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the concert in May.
As I said, we begin that concert with John Adams' Short Ride in a Fast Machine, which I think you have, just by chance, queued up.
Just have it right here. And the date for that is the 17th of May,
That's right, Sunday, May 17th, 2 p.m.
Okay, at Davies Symphony Hall.
At Davies Symphony Hall.
Where can people go for more information about that?
Well, you can obviously go to the San Francisco Symphony website, and I would assume there's a phone number over there that you can call for tickets.
I'm sure there is.
Why don't we cue up that great track of the Short Ride to Fast Machine?
All right, here it is. Short Ride in a Fast Machine, music of John Adams, one of many pieces being performed by the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra, Donato Cabrera. I'm looking forward to this show. This will be the 17th of May.
May 17th, 2 p.m. We do four concerts a year, and this will be the final concert of this season. We're looking forward to it.
You may go to sfsymphony.org for more information. You may telephone 415-864-6000 at Davies Symphony Hall box office on Grove Street between Van Ness and Franklin Street in San Francisco if you want to make a personal appearance. And also thank you, Dan Visconti, and looking forward to the premiere of your piece called Breakdown as part of California Symphony Performance in Walnut Creek, 4 p.m. on Sunday at the Hoffman Theater Lesher Center for the Arts. Dan, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me, Kevin. From the sublime to even the more sublime.
Hello, my name is Elder Price, and I would like to share with you the most amazing book.
Hello, my name is Elder Grant. It's a book about America a long, long time ago.
It has so many awesome parts, you simply won't believe how much this book can change your life.
Hello. My name is Elder Green. I would like to share with you this book of Jesus Christ.
Hello, my name is Elder Young.
Hello.
Did you know that Jesus lived here about it now.
Hello.
In this nifty book, it's free. No, you don't have to pay.
Hello.
Hello. My name is Elder Smith. And can I leave this book with you for you to just peruse?
Hello.
Hello.
I'll just leave it here. It has a lot of information you can really use. Hello.
Hi.
My name is
Jesus Christ.
You have a lovely book.
This book gives you the secret to eternal life.
Sound good?
Eternal life.
With Jesus Christ.
It's super fun.
Ding dong.
And if you let us in, we'll show you how it can be done.
Thank
you. Sure?
Well,
that's fine.
Goodbye.
Have fun in hell.
Hey, now.
You simply won't believe how much
this
book will change his mind. This book will change your life.
Hello, would you like to change religions? I have a free book written by Jesus.
No, no, Elder Cunningham, that's not how we do it. You're making things up again. Just stick to the approved dialogue. Elder, show him!
Hello!
Hello!
My name is
Elder Cunningham!
And we would like to share with you this book of Jesus Christ.
Hello!
Hello!
Hi-ho!
Just take this book for you!
You see, you simply won't believe how much this book changes book will change his mind.
Hello.
Hello, so you won't burn in.
Cunningham, an honor to have you here. And if going door to door to sell the Book of Mormon doesn't work out, there's always openings in public radio during our fun drive.
That's lovely to hear. Thank you. Always looking for a plan B.
AJ Holmes, welcome to KLW.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Oh, this is, you know what? I thought I was the only person who hasn't seen the Book of Mormon yet. But you know what? I think there are a number of you who haven't seen
that. It seems that way. Yeah, people keep coming. So
that's to the uninitiated, what is the Book of Mormon, besides the book that Joseph Smith,
besides the actual Book of Mormon,
the original Book of Mormon,
the musical version is a 2-hour musical comedy written by Matt Stone and Trey Parker, the geniuses behind South Park. It is a story of two young Mormon missionaries who get sent on a mission to Uganda. And they arrive and find that their typical Mormon story that they've been trained to tell the villagers is not necessarily resonating with their way of life. And hilarity ensues. We go on from there.
Oh, boy. How does this production of the Book of Mormon, it's been on stage since, 2011?
Yeah, about going on 4 years now, yeah.
How did the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church, I don't know, did they give a blessing there, or how do they coexist? They haven't sued you guys.
They have not as of yet. No, knock on wood. No, they have actually responded very positively. They've been very clever about it, in my estimation. They take out full page ads in the playbill that explain that you've seen the show, now read the book. The book is always better. And it's hard to argue with that logic, you know. I think we had one woman who even wrote us a letter after seeing the show saying that she had never heard of the Mormon Church and later went to some of their meetings and converted to Mormonism. I think she later converted away from it again. But so we've had some cross-pollination for sure.
You have been doing recruiting then?
Apparently, unwittingly, yes.
Okay. I used to have somebody in my life who was very much a church person, not a Church of Mormon, a Catholic, but she always said, that's a Mormon missionary. You know how you can tell is how they're dressed.
Mm-hmm.
The simple tie, the simple dress shirt,
yes.
Maybe black slacks, maybe tennis shoes,
yes.
Because it shows frugality. And they're always on bicycles, too.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Did you have to study for, what did you have to do to study for the part to be a Mormon missionary?
Well, I grew up around a lot of Mormons, actually. I grew up in Agoura Hills, Southern California, so I had many Mormon friends growing up, and I got to meet their families, and it is sort of that thing of they all seem to have a certain sort of attitude. They're lovely people. It's sort of the nicest people you'll ever meet, you know?
That's what I understand.
Yeah, and that's really the main thing that we tap into in the show is this. There's perhaps a little bit of a glassy-eyed enthusiasm that is tapped into. But other than that, I mean, we wear the costumes, and I know some of the stories, but truthfully, my character doesn't know all that much about Mormonism either. So probably the less I know, the better for my specific part in the show.
Oh, yeah. So it's like, sort of like joining an organization. You have to put in so many hours.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Absolutely.
I know quite a few political and other religious organizations that kind of put that requirement on Uganda.
Yes, we get sent to Uganda of all places.
Oh my
yes.
gosh! Oh gosh! Oh, and I'm sure hilarity ensues.
Yeah, it doesn't go quite the way we hope.
Completely give, but it's happening at the Orpheum Theater. It's happening now through Saturday, the 27th of June, mm-hmm. at the Orpheum Theater on Market Street at High Downtown. You can go to shnsf.com for tickets and information and everything. Do you have a favorite part of the production that?
Absolutely.
That you like, a favorite line, a favorite song?
Sure, yeah. At the end of Act One, I get to do this awesome song called Man Up, which is the closest thing to a rock star moment I'll ever get to have in my life, probably. Ooh. As an actor. The lights are flashing behind me. I got strobe lights going. I get to be, belting a high Q above Z on a platform that's rotating on the front of the stage. It parodies every musical we've ever had, from Les Mis to Sound of Music to, it's an epic blowout number. So that's great. I also love, my character starts... I start making things up. I start inventing a new religion, because Mormonism is not relating to these people's lives. Nothing that they go through has anything to do with Joseph Smith in America. So I start inventing new stories that throw in elements of Star Trek and Lord of the Rings and Star Wars and
oh my God.
Things like that. And start
improvising. Okay.
Exactly, yeah. Start crafting a whole new religion that they really take to. So I like inventing, spinning that yarn every night.
Oh, wow. A.J. Holmes is our guest here on this segment of Open Air, and he plays the part of Elder Cunningham in this production of the Book of Mormon. Tell me how long you've been working on this. Is it this production here in San Francisco, or have you been on other productions of the Book of Mormon?
I've been in actually all four productions of the Book of Mormon. There are two national tours, and then there's the Broadway company, and I just got back from 6 months in London with the West End company. I think that's my claim to fame as part of Mormon, is I'm the only one to do all four companies of the show. So I'm sort of the pinball Mormon that they bounce around from place to place, which has been lovely for me. I've got to see some incredible cities. I'm not lying when I say that San Francisco is absolutely my favorite place to be. So happy I'm back here.
You're from here, aren't you?
I'm from Agoura Hills, yeah. So Southern California.
Okay, Southern California, right.
I have family in Moraga. My grandma lives out there. And, okay. My dad's from up here. I got lots of relatives in Marin and places like that. So hopefully they're all listening. Hello.
Herb Cain once said, for people who were going to the Olympics back in 1984 in Southern California, they said, what's your favorite part of L.A.? They said San Francisco.
Absolutely.
They all fly up here for something wonderful. I'm so much looking forward to this.
Yes.
I'm so glad we must see it. I will tell people once again, Book of Mormon is performing now through its weekend performances, right?
8 shows a week, yeah. 2 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday, and every night but Monday.
Okay. Every night but Monday.
Yes.
You got to have a break.
Yes.
Happening now through Saturday, the 27th of June at the Orpheum Theater, 1192 Market Street at High Downtown San Francisco. I like to know where things are.
Absolutely. We're in a great part of town.
It is. It's a very interesting part of town. One of my favorite Vietnamese imperial rolls places is nearby there.
Oh, you'll have to let me know.
It's 6th and Mission. It's called Toulon.
All right.
shnsf.com is the website. And Toulon did not give me any money to mention that. I want you to know. And A.J. Holmes, so great to meet you and talk about Book of Mormon. We're going to go to another song here, 2x2. What's going on in this song?
This is where all the Mormon missionaries get paired up with their mission companions, which in my life has a big parallel, because I got paired with the lovely Mr. Billy Tai, who plays my mission companion. And we went to London together, and now we got sent here together. So it's kind of a funny parallel that the show fosters strong male friendships over different countries for the actors as well as the characters within the play. But so this is where they're all getting paired up and told where they will be spending the next 2 years of their life.
And excellent. A.J. Holmes, congratulations, and keep on doing this.
Thank you. Thank
keep
you so much for
doing
having
this
me.
Production of Book of Mormon at the Orpheum Theater now through the end of June. You may go to shnsf.com for tickets and information. 2x2 from the Book of Mormon.
Ever seen? Oh, come on, you guys. The most important time of a Mormon kid's life is his mission. A chance to go out and help heal the world. That's my mission. Soon I'll be off in a different place, helping the whole human race. I know my mission will be something incredible.
Elders, form a line and step forward when your name is called. Elder Young.
Yes, sir.
Your mission, brother, will be Elder Grant.
That's me. Hey, brother.
And your mission location is Norway.
Oh, wow. Norway, land of gnomes and trolls.
Kua, heya, shua, zadap, wow.
2x2, we're marching door to door, 'cause God loves Mormons and he wants some more. A 2-year mission is our sacrifice. We are the army of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
2x2, and today we'll know who will make the journey with and where we'll go. We're fighting for a cause, but we're really, really nice. We are the army of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Elder White and Elder Smith.
Oh, I knew we'd get paired together.
Your location will be France.
France, land of pastries and turtlenecks.
2x2, I guess it's you and me. We're off to preach across land and sea.
Satan has a hold of France.
We need to knock him off his perch.
We are the soldiers of the army of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Elder Cross and Elder Green, you will be serving in Japan.
Oh, Japan!
Land of soy sauce!
And Mothra!
Elder Harris and Elder Brown.
Heavenly Father, where will I go on my mission? Will it be China or old Mexico on my mission? Australia, where they say g'day, but I pray I'm sent to my favorite place, Orlando.
And your mission location is Uganda.
Uganda? Doesn't Uganda have enough problems with the North American missionaries coming there telling them what to do? Book of Mormon, now through the end of June at the Orpheum Theater, shnsf.com for the website for tickets for that show. KLW is the media sponsor for the Berklee Symphony, which continues its 2014-15 season tonight at 8 p.m. with Homage. Music director Joana Carneiro will lead the orchestra in Mozart's Requiem and choruses from The Death of Klinghoffer by John Adams, with special soloists and the university and chamber choruses of UC Berklee. Information and tickets at berkleesymphony.org. KLW will once again broadcast the Berklee Symphony season Mondays at 9 p.m. in the month of May with your host, David LaTalib. For more information, go to klw.org. KLW San Francisco, it's 2 o'clock.